You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Brody Neuenswander. Now we're talking.
Guten Abend. Jetzt gibt es Type Radio.
You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Donald.
I'm Lisa.
Today is Saturday, 27th of August. We're at the Amsterdam Sign Painters Conference Letterheads 2016, and our guest is Brody Neuenswander. Nice to meet you. We have a first signature question, which is, are you religious?
Am I religious? Completely and absolutely, yes. I can only say that life seems to be filled with questions you can never answer, and you spend your life searching for those answers. They're big questions, small questions, so that's a religious process.
And do you have rituals?
Do I have rituals? Yes, I call them delay rituals. They have everything to do with either cleaning the studio before starting a work, or a long process of collaging before actually getting down to making the real work, all sorts of other things. They're rituals that avoid decision making and avoid confronting sometimes the fear of a work not working out very well.
And how long does that take?
Oh, years, months, years.
Years to start a project?
Well, I think the way of looking at it is, say, assess the last 10 years and how much it was spent actually with the pen or the brush on the surface, and how much of it was doing some other thing, and a lot more of it's doing some other thing. Partly that is really the complication of being a modern artist and designer, where digital processes interfere and so on. But another ritual really is, and I think it's a very bad one, answering emails before settling down to a day's work. People should not do that.
All right. What is your first typographic, calligraphic memory?
Oh, well, that's a very clear one. When I was just 8 years old, my mother and sister and I moved to Germany. She had some research to do there. And I switched from an American school, elementary school, where we were still writing with a sharpened pencil on paper, making ball and stick letters. And in Germany, the children of the same age were already using fountain pens for cursive. So that was a pretty big shock to have to confront this cursive script, the new tool. And also, they were still using slates with chalk for some of their daily work, math course and so on. While I was in Germany then, I realized that letters were very, very powerful things, and I can still remember writing a poem and decorating it and drawing on the letters, trying to make them beautiful. And this all then got switched around when a year later we moved back to the United States, and that same class of kids had gone on to writing cursive with a ballpoint pen, but a different cursive. So I had to change again. And I actually think that this process really set me on the road towards becoming a calligrapher later.
And do you think the German system was a lot better if you were a different pen?
There's a very, very pertinent question. First, because yes, a fountain pen is better if you're teaching children cursive, because the angle at which you hold the pen allows you to make better movements of the hand and better shapes naturally, ergonometrically. Now, if you use a ballpoint pen, you tend to hold it more upright, and this cramped pen grip that young people now have is partly due to this, the writing instrument, the ballpoint pen. But the other question really is the writing systems that children are being taught. And I think that in those days, probably the American system was better as far as the shapes are concerned, because it was the tail end of what would of a system based on a Spencerian script, a slanted oval script, which is flowing out of the natural movements of the hand and the wrist very easily. And the Europeans had gone to a circular form, which was more upright and wasn't so naturally cursive. So in that sense, the European system was probably intellectually sounder, but not so good for kids for the normal movement. And the American one was better for that. Both of them have been swept away by the tide of history in the meantime.
And now, I'm not aware how children are taught.
Well, the European handwriting systems are universally bad, and the teachers who teach them are universally inept. So when parents go and slap their kids around because they have bad handwriting, they're making a mistake, they should go slap the teacher around. It really is the fault of the system and the lack of emphasis given to it now. The States, the problem has been the same for a very long time. And in the United States, they led the way by starting to eliminate cursive writing from the schools. Finland, just at the national level, eliminated in 2015. And they're all going to be very sorry, because what they're going to discover is, first, if you don't teach fine motor skills to students, that has one cost. And if students, let's say at high school and university level, if they don't write their notes by hand, they don't retain it as well as when they keyboard, it just basically goes in and out. There's very little retention with keyboarding of notes. And you tend to take more notes, so you don't concentrate your remarks as you do with handwriting. So I think there's two reasons, and having nothing to do with the fact that I love writing, but quite simply the science is showing that the fine motor skills and the handwriting of words are both very valuable learning tools.
Is there a day that you go about without writing?
I don't think so, really, but there's a day I go about not writing at a small level. Sometimes I'm taking huge tools and writing letters a meter tall or splashing them around with gallons of paint. The shape of the letter tends to guide my creative process. It's an abstract concept in your head, capable of immense variation. If you think of all the different kinds of A's that you know, and I was making a list recently, and I just couldn't stop after hundreds and hundreds of different variations of the A appeared. So this is an abstract material that you can reshape in your head and then bring onto a surface.
And would it, you say for you, is it the form that leads you, or is it the meaning of the word?
Right. In the beginning, it was the form. Okay. So as a kid in Germany, I can remember pressing my nose to the glass of a case with a medieval manuscript and just being absolutely transfixed by that mysterious thing in there, and realizing that if you turned the page, there was more of it and more of it, and you were only seeing this little bit of this magical object behind glass. And that was something perhaps of the mystery of the meaning, of which I had little idea. But over the years, as I moved from being a calligrapher, and I say this very, very hesitantly, to being an artist or a text artist, the process has shifted from being the creation of forms that in themselves interested me as graphic form to those that could suggest meaning in different ways. And my tool has become really not so much the letter shape, but the, let's say, the fine-tuning of legibility issues. How much or how little will I let a viewer read? Where will I stop their entrance into the language I'm giving them and promote their reading process so that they actually are engaged in kind of a decoding of a complicated set of signs?
You studied more like on an art historical field, right?
Yeah,
have you started writing already? Like doing calligraphy during your studies?
What happened was when I did my undergraduate studies in the States at Princeton University, and I did my dissertation on medieval manuscripts, how they were made. And I continued studies in London, going for a PhD, which eventually became methodology. So that's not what I wanted to study, but that's how it grew under the advice of my professors. And so I was learning not about art history, but about how art historians work. And at the same time, I was able in London to take a full-time course in calligraphy. And that was just a passion that I don't like the word hobby necessarily, but I suppose that's what people would call it. And the fact that a couple of days a week I was going and sharpening quills and writing and dealing with questions of paper and gold leaf and all the things of a traditional calligrapher's education, and then the rest of the time going to the British Museum and reading these hugely thick German books of theory, the back and forth between the physical activity and the mental activity was really interesting. And certainly as far as which one I would vote for in the end, it was the actual making of things. So I stopped being an art. I didn't become an art historian. I became somebody who made things that maybe art historians would.
Although I found what I've read on your blog and your website is that it is not just the craft. It is the history and the meaning and its position in the world and society and art, which I find really interesting reading. Was that always the case from the beginning, or when you started realizing calligraphy means something? It's just not a combination of letters and forming words, but it's like the way it's written is really has a meaning.
Well, that takes us back to your very first question, am I religious? Mm-hmm. You know, looking at those books in Germany behind the glass, they sparkle with some kind of mystery. It's clear, even if you don't know what you're looking at, they are representations of some vast set of meanings. and you want that meaning, you want to know what that is. If I see an Islamic manuscript, it brings its world with it. Chinese calligraphy brings its world with it. Now, the question is, why is it written things that speak to me that way instead of, let's say, painted things or sculpted things? They all do, but the most intense message comes to me through written things. And looking at modern calligraphy, I began to realize most of them aren't really engaged in that process. They seem to stay on the surface of shape and not really deconstruct what they're doing. And it seems to me, at least in our time, it's kind of hard to be an artist if you don't take apart your process and look at what the ingredients are and see what needs shifting to reflect your own values or the values of your time a little better. And so it really became, there has been a big shift over the last 20 years towards investigating the meaning of my process and the meaning of written documents generally.
And you've also worked on different types of media, paper and body and skin.
I think everything. Everything. Just about
is
everything.
Anything left that...
I haven't written on, let's say, lettuce leaves yet.
Okay.
Well, I think what happened was, you know, writing in the West through its whole history was an applied skill. The people who produced our books and written documents over the last 2,000 years were in Roman times slaves in the Middle Ages, monks, that's a kind of a slave in a sense, unpaid labor, and in the later period from the Renaissance on, these were scriveners producing documents and so on. We don't have that situation that you have in China of the Mandarin poet scribe. He's an aristocrat, he's creating his poetry and he's writing it down. And because he's using a brush, the whole society realizes his marks express his inner life. We don't have that. And so at a certain point, I realized, well, what a pity. We've missed the whole, basically, half the process which would have converted our writing into a higher art form instead of being relegated to the minor arts never occurred in our society for social and historical reasons. And, you know, I've said about fixing that as much as I can, but I'm just one guy, and I think a lot of calligraphers at least are starting to realize it's an issue, but what you really see is that other artists are picking it up. If you think of artists like Bruce Nauman or Cy Twombly who work with text, they have used the letter form, the written message, in a way that loads it with the significance we expect of a great work of art. Now, they just happen not to have done it in a calligraphic way. They've done it either typographically or in kind of handwriting, perhaps, you might say.
To go back, if calligraphic work was allocated then to slaves, you think that it was a craft that nobody appreciated or it was not respected? What was the reason for that? Because the word was very important. Or is it because it was a language that was passed down? I mean, it was always about the spoken word and it was passed down through...
This excellent, you're sort of concentrating the dilemma in just a couple of sentences, which is wonderful. And maybe it's useful to say that I'm now engaged in a project. I'm engaged in a project now which is helping us to study all of this and put it in perspective, which is a three-part documentary for Arte on the origins and future of writing seen globally. Mm-hmm. And so we really are doing comparative calligraphy. Looking at why did the Chinese tradition develop the way it did, and why did the Islamic tradition develop in a different direction, and then ours in yet another direction. And the social historical factors are really very important. Roman books were produced by slaves, often Greek slaves, educated Greek slaves. So you don't have to imagine a slave under a whip or something. You simply imagine somebody who has a legal status of indenture. And a highly respected industry in Rome, you'd go into the shop, you'd go into the library, you'd borrow the book, you'd take it across the street to the shop and give it to the publisher, and he would give it to the writer and say he needs it by next Thursday. And you would even choose the script based on how much you wanted to spend. A more formal script took longer and would be more expensive. The Middle Ages is really no different at all. And even when books are starting to be produced in the 15th century in secular workshops in the cities, you're still paying for your script by style, whatever takes longer. And who is doing it? It's paid labor. This is the artisan class. They are not being asked for their artistic opinions. And if you're in China, however, you have the state examinations, which are set, oh goodness, if it's every year or every few years, forgive me for not knowing. But the state examinations instituted in the second century went on till 1906, and the administrative class of the country was chosen, and you had to sit a calligraphy examination. And they were going to analyze your calligraphy for your character to know whether you were reliable, accurate, trustworthy, and followed Confucian principles. And your calligraphy would reveal that to the examiners. And if you passed those exams, you were then set for life. You were elevated to the Chinese aristocratic level. And you had vast power and the chance to accumulate wealth. And in troubled times, what's the Chinese going to do? The Mongols come in, they conquer, they create a dynasty. The educated Han flee to the hills, and they live in their villas, and they write poetry. So and they are the calligrapher. So that their response to shifts in power is a calligraphic response, a refined, educated response. So who is doing the calligraphy? The upper classes, the educated classes. In Europe, it's the artisan class. And in the Islamic world, again, it's another story. So it really is all determining who is doing the work.
Prospero's books. I read also that you are ready to leave that behind.
It's never going to work.
Probably not. Well, we have to mention it anyway, because it was quite a remarkable movie when it came out in 89, I think.
89, we started. It must have been 90 that it came out.
Okay, probably. Mm. Peter Greenaway. Especially because his way of intricately designing the movie, also the calligraphy being the topic, the subject of the movie. Did you realize that when that job came along and you were asked to do that?
Oh, heavens, no. In fact, in all the Greenaway projects, I never realized in advance what was going to happen. And I'm flying to Denmark tomorrow to paint on a wall for Greenaway again, and I really have no clue. I believe he relies on a certain ad hoc panic on the part of his collaborators to get the best out of them. But first of all, I think Prospero's, if I'm not mistaken, was the first fully digitally edited film. And the fact that the calligraphy could be elevated to such an important role was due to the wonderful filming techniques that we developed, or they developed, of getting the camera lens very, very close to the pen indeed, and lighting it beautifully. It was Sacha Verny and all that, so what you expect but the best. The fact that the artistic message of that calligraphic presence is so intriguing has entirely to do with Greenaway, and the questions he asked me at that moment. Literally, as the pen's hitting the paper, he's saying, ah, there's some alliteration in this phrase from Shakespeare. Bring it out in the calligraphic forms. You don't have any time to think. You just do the first thing your impulse suggests, and often it worked pretty well. So what is my contribution? Is that impulse to change the shapes of the letters at his instant command, really.
And having the skills, obviously, to sort of make it into a result that was to his liking.
Yes, I was just developing those skills at that time.
But in the pillow book, for example, is the Chinese calligraphy also by...
No, Yuki Yaora was her name, Japanese calligrapher living in London. She was fantastic. But the email that I got when he wanted to start pillow, when he announced to me that there would be a film called Pillow Book. He said, I need you to find a team of between 10 and 20 Japanese and Chinese calligraphers who can do all these different styles on bodies in Europe and in Japan. Oh, well, are you kidding?
Kind of specific.
Yes. Well, I found one in the end. First of all, many wouldn't do it on skin. And second of all, most of the Japanese and Chinese calligraphers living in the West weren't very good. So we really found Yuki was the one who had to imitate the hands of many different people.
Okay, and a lot of the things that you see around you is digital. Calligraphy, a lot of it is with paper or on the... I know you haven't drawn on the lettuce leaves yet, but on actually purely on screen and drawing using a digital surface? Is that something that's interesting for you, or you think that's not?
I do it a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, I do that a lot. I have a large Cintiq screen,
okay.
The largest one.
Okay.
And I have literally worn my stylus down to a nub.
Okay,
and
so that is
the glass is practically, yeah, I'm going to have to replace it because with the original generation Cintiqs, you can't take the glass out and replace
okay.
it. So a great deal is generated directly onto the screen. It depends on what it's going to be in the end, what the feeling of the line, the quality
and
of the
line. And you can get the quality that you want?
Certain kinds, yeah. yeah. So if it's going to be, if we need true inkiness, then, and a great deal, a lot of the clients, it really needs to say ink. It needs to say hand and ink. And that's almost impossible to fake. And since I'm actually very fast, I wouldn't see the point of trying, going through the long process of imitating wet ink when I can go just a few feet away from my computer and dip a pen and do it. The great thing is the scanner. It's my interface with the world. So I do all this calligraphy and scan it, and then I will piece it together sometimes, like for the Rijksboek of Marcel Wanders is a great deal of retouching on the Cintiq, but again with a stylus because it's faster. And then I have an animation packet called TV Paint, which is a French product, and I can click on and record any drawing or writing process for as long as I like. And produce a digital file that I can then give to my editor, and he can include it in any kind of film that we're making. So I do video installations and so on, and the writing sometimes will be digitally generated. But it is still more fascinating to watch a real quill dipped in ink filmed from a few centimeters with a macro lens. And beautifully lit so that every drop of ink just is luscious. There's nothing quite like that for getting people hypnotized. And the digital processes are, as it were for me, more preparatory. Once you've done your handwork and you have to interface with a laser machine or the film or whatever it is, then it goes into the computer via the scanner and or gets filmed.
And what would you consider a failure for you? Like,
well, plenty of those. Plenty of those. Right now I'm wrestling with, I've made some things that should become artist books, and I'm breaking my head now for quite a while over what would writing look like that is not just handwriting, because I want something with more graphic force than that. And I'm also thinking that handwriting is no longer quite reflecting in our society what it did 20 years ago, as it were the authentic voice of somebody writing down there, in their diary, say, "Dear diary, these are my honest thoughts." That's what handwriting might have meant in a work of art, for example. Anything calligraphic seems to be from some world that, where does that come from? What does that relate to? And so I'm not sure how to pump a message into those shapes that is meaningful to our world, our Western world. And so the cross-fertilizing that's coming from Arabic calligraphy and Chinese calligraphy, which I then sort of, as it were, mix into the Latin letters to make them graphically more powerful, that's fascinating me, but I'm still not seeing it as something that could be a general carrier of meaning. The way the forms that, let's say, the graffiti artists are able to do for a certain segment of society. And then you have these weird things going on, like the calligraphy movement, which is a sort of international group of young artists who seem to be picking up, especially on Gothic. And who would have thought you'd revive Gothic all of a sudden?
You know, it's Niels Milman, he's an Amsterdam designer. Mm-hmm. His writing name is Shu, and he started the whole thing. He started doing the broken script and made that cross between street art and this old German.
What's that meaning for him? Why does he keep picking up on Gothic?
I have no idea. It's just a style that he started, and he kept on doing it.
But styles mean something, always. And I'm wondering, you know, what if you look at the trajectory of Gothic, it of course it was the Germanic script, and then it was printed in German, and then it was dropped for the Latin letter for the rest of Europe, but the Germans kept it until 1941 when Hitler actually banned it and went over to the Latin letter. And there it kind of lay dormant until the music industry picked it up. What am I thinking? AC/DC and Alice Cooper and all that kind of the earliest violent and heavy metal world of music. And so they must have liked it because it could be associated with the Nazi thing and the danger and the forbidden. I'm just wondering, I'm trying to deconstruct the meaning of Gothic.
I have with clients, when I propose a logo or a headline that resembles that broken script, they always say it's too German.
Right.
And also meaning it's too Nazi.
Right.
That's the whole, it's immediately attached with that. I don't know.
So would you say that the young calligraphy people like it precisely because of that dangerous...
I would say more like the punk aesthetic uses it to sort of shock previous generation. That could be in there, but I'm not sure if that's the case, actually.
Yeah, it is also the easiest calligraphic style because you basically only have to make straight lines.
Exactly, yeah. That could also be...
But like Pokras Lampas, do you know him? Well, his stuff is pretty amazing, and he's putting it on everything. And what it does have, it seems to me to look very now. And so I was trying it the other day, just thinking, I'm 57, can I do something that's like these young kids? Well, yes, is the answer. I have enough training in my hand to do that. But does it have that same thing that they put in it? No. It's a generational, I don't know what, energy that they bring to it, and a vision that they have, which comes out in tiny little subtle aspects of the letter shapes, which means that their work looks like this calligraphy movement, and mine looks like an old, very skilled calligrapher doing the calligraphy style.
Yeah, maybe it's better to be not bothered by all this history and education.
Well, then take my PhD and burn it, because that's what they did to me with that one.
Are you pleased to see, because there seems to be a sort of a resurgence of calligraphy and a sort of appreciation of brush and writing in general. Are you pleased to see that?
Absolutely. I'm shocked to see that this letterheads world, I didn't know it existed. And it's a parallel universe to the calligraphy world. It's where the men are. The women are mostly in the calligraphy world. And they're telling me here it's because the letterheads are these sort of, what would you call them, sign writers, they're going to be working outside on ladders and scaffolding and on trucks and cars and vans and all that sort of thing, sort of men's stuff. And the paper and the pens and the inks and all are the women's stuff. But it's also, there's a generation difference. The calligraphy world is a hobby, a lot of women from about 45 years on doing this. And these seem to be young people hoping to make a living at it, God help them.
Strange that now it's women over 45, because obviously in the past it was only men. Mm-hmm. I mean, what? Yeah, it's associated also. Yeah, like a hobby in a way.
Replacing needlework.
Okay, or ikebana calligraphy. You know that sort of.
Yeah.
And I find that strange.
It is strange, and it is changing too, because as you say, this. First of all, a lot of people, especially in the States, have discovered that if you learn a copperplate hand, you can earn a ton of money doing envelopes and stuff. And it's not an unpleasant way of making a living if you don't mind working at home on your own most of the day, and really you earn as much as you work. So it is a possible career for somebody who doesn't want to just sit in front of a computer the whole time. But I think that's in the end the issue we're talking about. We've trained all these people into a digital world where basically you say you graduate college, one way or the other, you're going to be in front of a computer screen. And some people say, God, are you kidding? I don't want to live like that. And so they're finding ways of working with their hands. But you know, if you want to be a blacksmith, great. What are you going to do? There's no more horses. And so these letterhead people, the younger calligraphy people, they're maybe settling for a level of earnings that's going to be a lot less than professionals in, information industry, insurance industry, lawyers, whatever. But they'll at least be out there and working with their hands. And maybe that's another kind of payment.
And do you teach? Like, do you do short workshops like that?
Yeah, I taught an awful lot over the years, always the workshop circuit, and that was usually the calligraphy world, which was the ladies over 40-something. And let me tell you, they can be really good, so there's nothing denigrating there at all. And I spent a lot of time trying to push that world in a direction that I felt it needed to go, which was towards investigating the meaning of what they were doing. So my course was always called Developing Meaning. And you could take it as many times as you like. You'd always learn something. Basically, I was using the techniques from art schools, art colleges, for investigating, developing stories, developing your story, finding ways of visualizing the story, and applying that to the process of writing. Now I'm traveling around more to graphic design schools. So these are college age students, 18 to 20 something, and giving short workshops just so that they know that, you know, you can actually make a letter yourself. Not only that, but you can change its shape in any way you like. And so I push the envelope of writing as fast and far as I can in the day or the week that I've got the students, so that they know that there are various things you can do to written language that, as a graphic designer or an artist, really, really can make a huge difference in what you're doing. I think it's catching on. More and more schools are asking for that. Eastern Europe more than Western Europe, interestingly enough. Yeah.
Final question?
Final question.
How would you like to be remembered?
How would I like to be remembered? Ah, I would like to be remembered as somebody who helped calligraphy to become a more artistically valuable process in the West and bring it a little closer to the level of the calligraphy traditions of the East.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Guten Abend. Jetzt gibt es Type Radio.